We are reading Introduction to Anthropology of Integration. We are beginning Chapter 3, entitled The Goal of Human Life, True Happiness. If someone were to ask you, do you want to be happy? Most surely you would say yes, without much hesitation. If you were asked, does everyone want to be happy? It may not be so easy to answer. To begin with, there is so much evil in the world. So many people seem trapped in a logic of addictions, arrogance, violence, revenge, and envy. It's hard to see how any of these things can bring happiness, and yet we must affirm that, just like us, everyone wants to be happy. Benedict XVI repeatedly pointed out that our age suffers from a crisis of reason. We no longer accept that we can know the truth, but affirm in our arrogance that we are the architects of truth. What does this have to do with happiness? This crisis impacts directly on how we interpret the word happiness. I think that what makes me happy has to do with the lifestyle I choose and with I am comfortable with. Once I don't impinge on the freedom of others, who are you to tell me that I may not be truly happy? From the perspective of the anthropology presented here, there is a valid and important subject dimension to happiness where true happiness is experienced as a personal choice that we are very pleased about. At the same time, we are invited to consider and evaluate the motives and forces behind our choices. So here is the crisis of reason Pope Benedict XVI was speaking about. Anthropology of integration identifies two scenarios. In the first, our choices may flow from a built-up store of patterns of behavior and thought arising from our experiences and decisions throughout our lives, where all the dimensions of the human person are harmoniously integrated. In the second, these decisions may flow from a built-up store of patterns of behavior and thought arising from our experiences and decisions throughout our lives, where the dimensions of the human person are not harmoniously integrated, but oppose and destroy each other. The internal tearing apart of the human person in the depth of his or her being is a source of unhappiness, even though a subject may choose to ignore it. In this way, we can affirm that a person may say they are happy, but with a closer look, we can see that they are not. Similarly, a person who I may think is unhappy because they seem externally constrained to me can actually be much happier than I am. My perception in this case is tainted from this integration. Consider the case of a businessman who travels from time to time to a faraway land for work. He's married and has three small children. In this distant country, he lives out an affair with another woman who affirms him and makes him feel special, something he feels is lacking from his wife. This individual is savvy and manages to perfectly cover his tracks. He has a double life, and if you ask him, he will say that he is quite happy pulling this off. It may well be that some of his colleagues are doing the same, so he does not see it as abnormal. Would you agree that this person is truly happy? Is there not something wrong with that kind of happiness? The reader is invited to put himself or herself in the shoes of the spouse of this person, who is faithful and has to make innumerable sacrifices every day to care for the children, even more so when the husband is away with another woman. Is this fair? Is it correct for man to be unfaithful and the woman to bear the brunt of carrying the family forward? Anthropology of integration recognizes that a businessman in such circumstances may say that he is happy, but this claim has to be tested to see if it flows from a truly human core. In this scenario, the person is divided. He is one way at home and another way abroad. His choices flow from interior disintegration that undermines human dignity, and so we can affirm that this is not truly human happiness. Another situation that one can consider is that of a woman who, after several years of marriage, discovers that her husband has a degenerative nerve disease. They have young children, and she's now in a situation where she must care for the children and accompany her spouse through his illness. Managing degenerative nerve disease is very complicated, both medically and psychologically, not to mention the costs that are involved. A young attractive lady who finds herself in such a situation will have to muster great, if not heroic, interior strength to keep positive and find meaning in the apparent misfortune. She may come to see it, for example, as tremendously enriching because it challenges her to be more humble, to be more understanding to others, and to be a much better person and friend to those close to her. This deepening of interior harmony and strengthening of relationships can be a source of great joy that is not immediately perceptible, seeing the external circumstances alone. A superficial person hearing of the predicament of a woman with young children and a husband with such a complicated ailment may think that she must be sad. How can she be happy with no time for herself, economic hardship and stress? Yet we find persons in such circumstances who are truly happy. What is more, we admire them and have them as our models for strength and the greatness of the human spirit. The reader can think at this time of persons he or she admires. Are they persons who have had an easy life? Or rather, are they not persons who have made great sacrifices for a noble ideal, for love of others and country? Perhaps it is the person who judges that such people have to be sad is the one whom happiness is eluding without recognizing it. True happiness hinges on the harmonious integration of all the dimensions of the human person. This perspective connects with the teachings of the ancient philosophers who placed the practice of virtue, in Greek arete, at the core of happiness, in Greek eudaimonia. Speaking of happiness, Aristotle used the image of a harp. Happiness consists in the human powers being played in a perfect harmony, as a master musician plays a harp, or like an orchestra in perfect unison. For Aristotle, this consists in living a virtuous life. For the sake of reference, it is worthwhile to quote here an important passage from Aristotle's Ethics that brings together his thoughts on happiness. He writes, "We state the function of man to be a certain kind of life, and this to be an activity or actions of the soul implying a rational principle, and the functions of a good man to be the good and noble performance of these, and if any action is well performed, when it is performed in accordance with the appropriate excellence. If this is the case, human good turns out to be the activity of soul in accordance with virtue, and if there is more than one virtue, in accordance with the best and most complete." In the Rhetoric, he gives a synopsis of what these virtues are, enumerating and describing them briefly. And we quote, it's a long quote, but please bear with me. "The parts or subdivisions of virtue are justice, courage, self-control, magnificence, magnanimity, liberality, gentleness, prudence, and wisdom. Since virtue is defined as an ability for doing good, the greatest virtues are necessarily those most useful to others. For that reason, people most honor the just and the courageous, for the latter is useful to others in war, and the former in peace as well. The next is liberality, for the liberal makes contributions freely and do not quarrel about money, which others care most about. Justice is a virtue by which all, individually, have what is due to them and as the law requires, and injustice is a vice by which they have what belongs to others and not as the law requires. Courage is a virtue by which people perform fine actions in times of danger and as the law orders and obedient to the law. And cowardice is the opposite, Self-control is a virtue through which people behave as the law orders in regard to the pleasures of the body. And lack of control is the opposite. Liberality is the disposition to do good with money. Stinginess is the opposite. Magnanimity is a virtue productive of great benefits for others. And magnificence is a virtue in expenditures productive of something great, while little-mindedness and stinginess are the opposites. Prudence is a virtue of intelligence, whereby people are able to plan well for happiness in regard to the good and bad things that have been mentioned earlier. Aristotle does not give a mathematical formula for judging the good and noble performance of actions. The harmony and beauty of it is simply recognized as such by the natural activity of the intellect. He appeals to implicit philosophy, which was discussed earlier. Happiness is caught more than taught, in that we know what it means to be happy when we see it lived in the example of others. Ultimately, it is the good man who teaches us what happiness is. In the paragraphs we have just read, we suggested two scenarios for understanding happiness. Happiness is experienced as a personal choice that we are pleased about, and everyone wants to be happy. But at the same time, we must evaluate the motives and forces behind our choices. Our choices may proceed from a position of an integrated human life, or our choices may proceed from a disintegrated human life. When they proceed from an integrated life, well, then we can say that's genuine happiness. When it proceeds from a disintegrated life, then we have to understand that is not true happiness, and that feeling that we may say that I am happy, it's very superficial and it will be short-lived. We then turn to Aristotle to state that he then hinges happiness on the idea of virtue, and we looked at two images, the idea of someone playing a harp and then an orchestra, so that happiness has to do with that harmonious living and working together of the different aspects of the human person. We read afterwards a long quote where Aristotle shows the list of virtues, and he shows what their opposites are in their vices, sort of just helping us along to sort of have like a little sort of a point of reference for looking at, you know, things we need to live to be happy, virtues, and then the things we have to be careful about that can undermine our happiness.